Welcome to the Authentically Rachel podcast, where I, Rachel, have authentic conversations that demonstrate the reality of God's sovereignty and grace in our lives. We all go through times of deep suffering, but it's how we respond to those circumstances in faith that set us apart. So join me, and together we will learn how total submission to God can carry us through the darkest of times. I want to begin this episode with a brief message. My guest and I are going to be discussing a very heavy topic, the loss of a child due to suicide. So if you have little ears listening, this might not be the episode for them. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, I want you to know, God sees you and He loves you deeply. Life is hard, and at times we have grief that's unexplainable. There have been many dark valleys I've gone through in my own life, but God is true to His word. Romans 8 says, "Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know what to pray as we ought, but the Spirit Himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words." This verse demonstrates to me that God knows me intimately, and He is sitting right there with me, even when I do not have the words to express how deeply grieved I feel. Now, on to my guest. I am so happy to have Beth Wall as my guest today. She's a wife, mother, grandma, Bible teacher, women's counselor, and she recently stepped down after 20 years of being in ministry in Colorado Springs. Beth had just started her job as a women's ministry director when, on a tragic Valentine's Day morning, in 2005, her son Jason took his own life. But God, He was right there helping her through one of the toughest times a mother can go through, her comforter and sustainer. Beth is here with me to share everything God has done in her life since that horrific day and how we as Christians can grieve in a Christ-like manner. Welcome to the podcast, Beth. I am so glad you're here. So take us back to what your life was like before your son passed. What was Jason like?
Oh, thank you for asking. And Rachel, it's great to be here with you. Our son, Jason, he was a quiet young man, very funny though. We laughed a lot with him. It was his senior year of high school, and he had a sweet little girlfriend that he liked to hang out with. The weekend before he passed away, he had been at our church's youth group retreat. So he had been up in the mountains with his friends and had a great time with them.
Nice, nice. Did he talk to you about what activities he did up there? And
what he was known for when he would go to those retreats was their skits. A couple of the adults, our dear friends, the Colognes, they were up there that weekend and they said he was hilarious. You know, and he was every year. That's what he was just really funny doing the skits. So
was he into drama and stuff like that, or just playing around, joking?
The funny thing was, when he was young, he had gone to this modeling conference and had met several agents. And one of the agents said, "We think you should try out for Harry Potter." They were getting ready to do the movies.
No way.
Yes. And so he thought about trying out. Well, he only told one person that he was thinking about doing this. And we drove into the parking lot at church, and that one person told the other kids, And so we got out of the car and this girl from across the parking lot yells, "Are you going to be in Harry Potter?" And he turned to me and said, "I'm not doing it."
Oh, no. Was he going to be like an extra or?
He was just thinking about auditioning, you know. So they were just starting that. And so, but when she did that, he was like, "I don't want to do that."
Oh,
so
my goodness.
But that was him.
Oh, my goodness. He would have been the next Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah. Who knows? He wasn't British, so. But who knows what might have happened.
Okay. Yes. That's true.
Yes, yes.
That's so hilarious.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
That's amazing. So you were telling me during our initial conversation, he had stomach migraines.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard about a stomach migraine. Can you explain
what that is?
What that is?
Yes. So I'd never heard of it either, but he kept having real stomach issues, just severe pain. And then he would throw up and they were episodic and he would just be laid out like he really would have to stay in bed and just close his eyes because it just the pain was so much. And at the same time, he always had in his field of vision the auras of a migraine. So light flashing, stars falling. So a doctor, my husband was stationed in LA at the time with the military, and a doctor out there was the one said, "Oh, he has stomach migraines." And like I said, we never had heard of that. The trouble that we had at the time was they did try to give him medicine to control the pain, but it would often make him throw up. Like it just, the pain medicine made it worse almost. So,
oh, yeah. No.
So just sleeping was what he could do. So,
Poor kid. You had just gotten a job. Right, as a women's ministry director?
I had actually taken over the year before. And so the theme that we had that year was the goodness of God. So I had studied, I took over mid-year. So I studied the goodness of God for about 6 months and gave a talk on it. And then I had just picked my first theme, and it was Our Times Are in His Hands. And so I had studied all that summer the sovereignty of God. And so I was thinking about both those things, the goodness of God and the sovereignty of God.
I think so often as Christians, it's hard, very hard to grasp the sovereignty of God. Can you take us back to that fateful day? What happened?
So that weekend, as I had said,
he had just gotten back from camp.
He had just gotten back from camp. Well, right before camp, on the Thursday before, he had had a migraine and he had not felt super well, but he went to school. And so then on our way to camp, he told me, "Mom, I had this weird hallucination," and he had visual things in his field of vision all the time. So in my mind, I thought, "Oh, that's a weird one." I didn't think of it as like maybe it was worse, but the whole weekend he was at the camp, he had big balls of light floating in his, you know, in his field of vision, and it scared him. And so actually, the kids slept with the lights on because it was bothering him and he didn't sleep. We just didn't realize he hadn't slept. So when he came home, he said, "I am really tired." So we said, "Okay, you need to lay down and try to rest this afternoon." But we just didn't realize how hard it was. He didn't really go to sleep, so he was really He'd had several days of not sleeping super well. So,
So you were telling me that he went for a walk.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He did.
What was that morning like for you?
So that morning, of course, we didn't know that he was not in the house. So it was Valentine's Day. It was that morning. The night before, he had said to me, "Oh, I didn't get a present for Sarah, his sister." And I was like, "Don't worry about it, buddy. We'll go in the morning. We'll go get something for him. So, you know, just don't worry about it." So that morning I got up and I wrote Valentine's cards for them. And so Dave had left for work. I could hear Sarah up getting ready for school. And I was talking to Dave. We always talked on the phone. We would pray together while he was driving. And so he was driving and I just said, "Oh, there's a fire truck down at the school," because I can see the school. I have binoculars. I have birding binoculars. I'm always looking at birds. So I just pulled them out to see down there and I saw Jason. And I said, "I think it's Jason." And I ran downstairs and his bed was empty. Our poor daughter, I just yelled, "It's Jason." And I ran out the door and ran down to the school. And so she got in the car and came down and my husband flipped around and we all just converged down at the school.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain the grief you must have gone through. And you were studying the goodness of God at that time. How do you think God prepared you for that trial?
I think it is always his word that holds us and carries us. So when my mom first arrived the next day, they came that night. And the next day she said to me, and we had both done a study in Isaiah. And she said, "Okay, we're going to not look for the garland of ashes. You have it. Let's look for the garland of joy. Let's look for God's goodness." And so I said, "Okay." And, you know, for some people, that might have been really hard, a hard word. But for me, it was what I needed. I needed to hear, because I was so in shock, I needed to hear, "Look for God's goodness." And so that I just set my mind to do that, to look for his goodness, even though the sorrow was, you know, just, you know,
unbelievable.
Yes, so unbelievable, so huge. So,
What verses impacted you in that time? I feel like Christians don't talk about God's sovereignty, and the church doesn't really teach how to suffer in a Christ-like manner. Going back to studying the goodness and his sovereignty, what verses stuck out to you?
So interestingly, it was the verses that I had been looking at already. So our theme that year was "Our times are in his hands," and that's from Psalm 31. And so I went to that a lot. And right before it says, "Our times are in your hands," it says, "You are my God and I will trust in you." You know, it's a paraphrase, but so I clung to that. I was like, "Okay, Lord, I don't understand this, but I'm going to trust in you." And then as my mom said, I'm going to look for his goodness. And so I did. I started looking for it. And even in the tiniest things, like that Sunday before he died, I never cleaned house on Sundays. But that day I just thought, "Okay, I'm going to clean house today." And so I did. And then I thought later, "Lord, you knew that we were going to have a house full of people. I had no clue." And so anyway, so I could see that he was preparing me and reminding me of his goodness later, that even in that, he was doing good for me.
Is there any word that stuck out that you cling to during that time that other people can remember? Is there a specific word that you kept repeating to yourself that would be helpful for listeners?
Lamentations 3 was okay. So helpful to me, you know, and everybody knows this, you know, from the song, Great is Thy Faithfulness, but, you know, it says, your mercies are new each morning. But I would say to myself, his mercies are new every hour, or his mercies are new when I need it. And so when I would be just weeping or just feeling the waves of grief or a loss, I would say, Lord, you have said your mercies are new each morning, but your mercies are new when we need them. And I loved also Hebrews 4, that we can go to the throne room of grace for mercy and help when we need it. And so that's what I would say. I would just say, okay, I'm in your throne room again, and I need your mercy. I need your faithfulness. I need to see your goodness. And he was so faithful every time. He did it in different ways, but he would answer that.
How did your church community come around you?
I would say not just even our small little church community, but the church community as a whole really surrounded us. The day he died, because the word went out to all the schools. And so a group, I believe from TCA, the mothers that pray from TCA, came and they prayed through our neighborhood. I don't think they knew which house ours was, but they prayed. And people started dropping things off at our house, paper plates and napkins and food. And then people showed up at our house and took over things for us. Someone just, one of our dear friends answered phone calls. And one person immediately said, I'll start putting together photographs of your son. And so they just took different aspects of life and started working, you know, and people opened their homes to out-of-town guests. And and they prayed for us. I would say one really remarkable one was one of my friends is friends with Stephen Curtis Chapman, and he was playing a concert that night. He offered to come to our house and to pray with us.
He was already here in town.
Mm-hmm, and he was going to come and talk to us. But in the end, we said, we don't think we can do it. We were so in shock. But we were so moved by the fact that he was willing to come to a stranger's house and pray with us. Anyway, that was how the community of Christ was. You know, people would say, hey, I'll show up. And I think that's what's important.
Well, with Job, I keep going to that every podcast. His friends showed up and they sat 7 days and 7 nights, probably just waiting and listening. I don't know if Job said anything, but they were just there in his presence. And I feel like if the church can grasp that idea, it would be a whole lot healthier and vibrant, in my opinion.
I would agree with you. I know our pastor showed up at the time and just sat quietly with us, and we would say often how meaningful that was, how important that was. And then my girlfriend, Debbie, for 2 years, almost 3 years, we walked every day and she would just let me talk. She would listen. So yeah, she showed up every day. And I can't even say enough how important that was.
Yeah.
Our church was wonderful. I mean, they showed up. They really just showed up, and we knew they were praying for us. Somebody brought us a whole binder of daily verses to look at, to open up, to bless us with. And people were very creative. And then people, really, we had notes from around the world. People, I don't know how they heard about it, how they heard about Jason's taking his life. People from around the world sent us notes encouraging us, telling us. We just knew people were praying for us. We felt like we were living on that.
What was it like being in a position of ministry where you had to help women, yet you were going through the unimaginable? How did God fill your cup so you could fill others?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say that what God did through it was, I guess, because I was vulnerable and everybody knew I was, and they knew the position I was in, I became safe. And so I feel like women opened up to me very quickly because they knew I would understand. And I was, again, just the word safe, I think, was what changed. And I'm not sure before that, that maybe I was as safe. I think that really, that was something the Lord did in the midst of all of it, and made me, I think, much more compassionate as well. So I feel like the Lord really, right at the beginning of this ministry, changed the shape of it by changing me.
What made you want to go into women's ministry?
Well, funny enough, when I was younger, I always thought, well, I'm not going to do anything with women. I don't know why I ever thought that, but I did. What led to go into women's ministry was actually Bible study. That was my real love. And so I had led the Bible studies for a couple of years. And the woman who was the women's ministry director before me was moving. And she didn't even actually ask me first. She asked another woman. And that woman said no. So I was kind of the backup. I was the B team. She said, you know, would you like to do that? And I prayed about it. And I thought, and it just happened. Sarah was a senior, and Jason was a freshman. And so it was kind of a good time to start something new. They were busy. And so I it was just the Lord's timing. Again, his sovereignty, you know, all those factors kind of came together. And so that's what started it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, and then, you know, the funny thing was, it was, I loved it. And I do love women. And I was always kind of a tomboy as a kid and hung out with the boys. So, you know, it was, isn't that funny? The Lord showed me even his plan is the right plan, that he gave me such a deep love for the very people that I was working with.
How do you think people can grasp on to the situation they're in and just say, God, is this your plan for my life? Is this real from you? How can women grasp on to that?
I think after studying God's sovereignty and then through the years just experience his good leading, he really is our shepherd. And I think he gives us each desires, you know, things that we love. And my love was studying the word. He leads us in that way. He opens up paths. I think we have a lot of freedom. When you look at the will of God, you know, his will is to pray without ceasing, to, you know, to to honor him with our bodies. It is to give thanks. The Bible talks about his will a lot, but not so much about this going this path or that. I think, except that he does say, you know, those of you who say you're going to go and make money, you don't know what the day will hold. You know, you should say, if the Lord wills. So I think it's an open-handedness, and we just try the things that are presented to us, the opportunities that we're given. And if we want to do them, we ask the Lord, we try it. And if it doesn't work out, that doesn't even mean that it wasn't his will. Maybe he's teaching us something in it. But I think we have a lot of freedom.
Yeah. Were you ever angry at God? Were you ever questioning his plan?
That's a great question again. So the night Jason died, Dave, Sarah, and I, we were waiting for our families to arrive. They arrived late that night. And we just kind of sat in the dark on the couch together, all three of us huddled. You know, it was like, oh, we have to be close together, you know? And we said to each other, we're going to let each other grieve in whatever way we're grieving. We're going to give each other freedom, and we're not going to judge each other's grief, but we're going to give freedom. My daughter was angry. She has said, I punched Jason in the coffin. She was so mad at him. She felt so left behind by him,
abandoned.
You know? So she was abandoned. Yes, she was so angry. And so, but my husband was profoundly sad. Jason got his sense of humor from Dave, and they both smile a lot and were funny. And that's how Dave is. Dave is very funny. But for 3 years, I didn't see him smile. He was just profoundly heavy and sad. And in my heart, I thought, I'm just going to feel whatever I feel. And so sometimes I felt like laughing. And sometimes I would be standing in Walmart and find myself weeping. And so when it comes to being angry with God, that was not where my brain went. I really, again, was just really focused on, I trust you and you're good, and I'm going to look for your goodness. And so I think that was just how I just went through feeling whatever I felt.
How did you handle, you said your husband was profoundly sad. Let's say you were wanting to laugh. How did you handle that?
I did it separately from him.
Okay.
Yes. So I was sensitive to him, and I remember even saying to the Lord, if I never see him laugh again, we're going to walk through this. And, you know, somebody said to me very interestingly, a couple of people said, you know, people divorce very easily when they've lost a child, and the statistics do bear that out. And at the moment when that person said that, it did make me angry. It was like, why are you saying that to me right now? But again, in God's sovereignty, I think I needed to hear that. Because then I very intentionally clung to Dave. And I worked very hard. I think we both worked very hard to move toward each other, because grief can be a very separating thing, especially when you're grieving differently. And you can just grieve in your head and be so separate from them. And so so that was a good word from the Lord, to cling to him. So I had been thinking, Lord, if I never see him smile again, we are going to walk through this life. But that wasn't the case.
What hope came from the aftermath of Jason's death?
Well, we saw several people come to Christ, including the impact on my family. My brother and my sister both came to the Lord after Jason died and were really impacted by his death. And it opened the conversation with my dad. And my dad eventually came to the Lord, but it really was through Jason's death that began to happen. And other kids, there was this interesting thing that happened a year after Jay died. Dave had meetings in Hawaii, and so I went with him, and we were hanging out over there. But on our way in the plane, literally as we were taking off, it was as if the Lord said to me, "Ask to see my goodness." And I argued with the Lord. I said, "Lord, I'm not going to know anyone there. How are you going to show me your goodness?" But I said, Okay, Lord, show me your goodness out of Jason's death." And so we landed. We had to go to this meeting with all of the people. So many wives came. And so we met this other couple. Dave knew him, not well, but knew him and knew, you know, was acquainted with him at work. And so they came over to us and we're talking, and then they said, "Hey, would you guys like to go to dinner?" We said, "Sure, that'd be super fun." He was actually from Hawaii, and he said, "We'll take you to an authentic place to eat." So we were like, "Okay, let's do it." And so we sat down at the table that evening. He said, "So I have something to tell you." And as soon as he said that, I thought, "Lord, you're going to show me your goodness. You're going to show it to me right now." And so he told us that when Jay died, a coworker of his son was struggling, and he immediately went and he got help for his son, and it really saved his son. His son was suicidal, and so it changed the course of that young man's life. And so this is the hope that that I think I can share, is that profound sadness that you feel in the beginning, that it's so heavy. I mean, actually, the first year, I would say we were in shock. And then you have that just that profound heaviness at times, you know, and it feels like it will be that way forever. But a friend of mine came and said, when she lost her daughter, she said about year three, it lifted. And I wasn't counting on that, but actually it was about year three. Dave began to smile. I could just feel a lifting in my spirit. And with our daughter, she would not talk about Jason at all for those 3 years. She just wouldn't. And so we let her do that. And we would talk about Jason separately from her, but we didn't bring him up, and we still celebrated our holidays. We thought, she's living, we're just going to live life with her on her terms. And so we did that. And it was at Christmas, I had decorated, and she was standing in the kitchen, and she said, "Mom, Jason would love this." And I knew, it was like, "Thank you, Lord. There's a lifting in her spirit. She's not so angry with him anymore."
Yeah, the goodness of God can be found even in the midst of grief.
Mm-hmm.
I said in the intro that we were going to learn as Christians to grieve in a Christ-like manner. Is there any other words of encouragement you can give?
Yes. I spoke at a suicide conference a number of years ago, and one of the things I said at that conference was that if you are a pastor or if you are somebody who is working with people who are grieving, and you're starting to tell them at 6 months, "Okay, it's time for you to move on," that is very premature. We were in shock till at least the first year. And so I would say just an encouragement to walk with people and let the Lord unfold that grieving process and not rush it and not put your timeline on it. I think that is really helpful. I would say the other thing is that it was actually a dear friend of Jason's. She was a teacher here in town, and she had a student whose brother had died by suicide. And so she was asking me what would be helpful for the teachers to know. And this student was very angry. And I said, just recognize that anger, he's not an angry child. He's grieving. To come alongside him and talk about that it is grieving. And so to just give him that time and not begin to characterize the person with that, because it will lift at some point. So I would say that's super important.
Is there any verse you would like to read for us as we close this time together? I just feel God's goodness right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure, I would love to. I want to go back to the Psalm 31 because that was the theme that year for us in our women's ministry. And he says, you know, but as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. But in that same psalm in verse 19, it says, how great is your goodness, which you have stored up for those who fear you. And I think even in that grieving process, when we fear him and when we're looking for him to act with goodness on our behalf in the midst of sorrow, it's goodness he has stored up for us. And so I think when we look to him and we're just open-handedly saying, here is my sorrow, here is my shock, here is this circumstance that I would never have asked for, but here I am, I'm going to look for your goodness. He shows himself good.
Amen. Thank you, Beth, for coming on this little venture of mine. It's been an honor and a privilege to have this platform to learn from women like you about how God has carried you through that time. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Rachel, for letting me share how good God is and in our story. And I just pray for anyone who may walk through this that they will also see how the Lord loves them and will walk with them.
Amen. Thank you for listening to the Authentically Rachel podcast. Please do me a favor and hit the like and subscribe button so you can be notified when the next story comes out. It also helps a lot with the algorithm. That way, more people can be encouraged by these conversations. Our suffering has a purpose to strengthen us and draw us closer to God, even when it seems like no one else can understand our situation. God knows, and He is right there beside us. I'm Rachel, and this is Authentically Rachel.